I'm not sure that I have a question, but I can try to word it as a question. It was said that people are willing and good-willed. So my question is for the podium. Maybe somebody could tell me what is the opposite of being well-intentioned. Nobody there? Nobody here? Right. It was, somebody said, the intentions are good. So I have this program in front of me. I don't know, maybe other people felt similarly. The title of the presentation, Psychiatrization of Those Who Are Different, Pathologizing, and of Those Who Are Being Politically Persecuted, or Those Who Think in Different Ways About Things. And then there were questions that were posed. And I think one of the questions was, should we look for a different space, a different arena in which to become active? Now, my experience with critical psychology, my experience, of course, is limited. I have local, regional experience. And my experience up to now tells me that the answer is yes, even if some people might not agree. But my experience is that I know people who consider themselves to be critical psychologists and who have published in this field, and I can tell you I myself am from the city of Oldenburg in Germany, and some might know what that means, but there's even an institution that offers counter-expertises. This is an institution that now no longer exists, but critical psychologists ran this institution. And I think I've made it clear that I am also in touch with a mental hospital, a clinic in that area, and I know that people time and again have been, if you will, incarcerated, have been detained in that institution, have been given terrible treatment, and using the institution that writes out counter-expertises, here I turn to them and try to use that institution to help these people who were detained, but it never led to any kind of a reaction, or it led to a reaction which really led to the opposite of what one would have wished for. So we have to think about whether the people were politically persecuted, and I would want the notion of people being politically persecuted in this context to be discussed here. So since I'm mentioning this institution that wrote up counter-expertises, this person is now president of the university in Oldenburg, and I would say he's an extreme neoliberal and is taking on a very authoritarian posture within the changes taking place within that university. Why am I mentioning this? Maybe it's only one individual, maybe this is not that significant, but I think it has made clear to me that when we are active in a particular way of conducting research in science, that we are kicking off things that then take on a life of their own, and then at some point you no longer have a grasp on it. And so my question is, when you're asking, should we look for a new field in which to become active, a new area, arena, then I think that is what I've been able to see here. Adam Chilok is my name. I haven't really prepared anything, but I have prepared something, but for a different event. And I'd like to present to you a case which I think illustrates what we've been talking about, and on the other hand, maybe shows us the discrepancy, or shows us how very far removed reality is from what we were presented with here. And this is a contemporary case. The New National Gallery here in Berlin has an exhibition on Ernst Ludwig Kirchner and the demise of Prussia. Ernst Ludwig Kirchner, while he lived, he died in 1938, very famous painters, one of the founders of German Expressionism, and fascists degraded him as a painter who was on the margins. And so just to be brief, there's a big sign in the entrance hall that gives a rundown of his life. And it says, March 1938, Austria was linked into the German Reich, which then led to a mania with Ernst Ludwig Kirchner that German soldiers could now also enter Graubünden, an area where Kirchner lived in Switzerland. This was shocking. I mean, Kirchner is one of the most famous painters of the 20th century, and this exhibition is a major exhibition, and he's a celebrated painter. And 63 years after his death, as I read this, he has not yet been rehabilitated. He is still seen in a pathological manner. He is considered to be someone with manic images. We know that Switzerland and that part of Switzerland was not occupied by German soldiers, and Thomas Mann emigrated to the United States, and many Swiss citizens were afraid that Hitler would arrive in Switzerland. And here we have a world-renowned painter who, with hindsight, we know the extreme violence and so on that was perpetrated by German soldiers, but he is seen as someone who is experiencing mania because he's afraid that German soldiers will occupy Switzerland, where he is living in exile. And so, in other words, with hindsight, we know that Switzerland was not occupied. So the one who was afraid of this occupation is deemed to be manic. So I think this is a very crass example. This celebrated painter, famous painter, today is seen as someone who was filled with manic demons, and no one protested. I myself wrote a letter to the organizers of this exhibition protesting against the way Kirchner is portrayed. And now someone is speaking and the microphone is not being used, and we cannot give you a translation, unfortunately, so please do point out to people that they will have to use microphones. Unfortunately, you cannot see the interpreters, otherwise you would realize that we are human beings and not machines that you can simply switch on and off. Well, this is interesting, but I think it was a highly academic debate, and for me, the main question is, how can we create new alliances? Neoliberalism was mentioned, and the deconstruction was mentioned, the varied deconstructions, and then capitalism absorbs, co-ops everything very quickly. We have experienced that recently, increasingly, especially when looking at it in a psychological, from a psychological viewpoint, what happens here and there. And then the question still remains, how can critical psychology make its contribution? I don't know, but I would like to discuss this. And I think this is one of my basic questions, since on the one hand, the system then masks it and promotes things and co-opts things, and things are going all in one direction, and yes, new level, and the genes on a different level from what we had 50 years ago. That was mentioned by someone when Mr. Clay spoke this afternoon, that came up. And then we don't know the emancipatory movement that existed and how it's been incorporated and absorbed. Now, be it the gay-lesbian movement or be it... I mean, all these movements are not new movements. They're no longer fresh and vital. And the question as to how to create alliances, I don't know how we as critical psychologists can add something to that, contribute to it. I have a question. I have a question. All of the speakers work at renowned institutions, so they're part of the renowned and well-accepted apparatus of academia, but they're also critical psychologists. Then something else, pathologizing. Here we have movements. I myself am in a movement that has been greatly degraded, and here we have the movement, for example, against nuclear power plants and so on, and this hasn't been touched on at all. Now someone again is speaking without a microphone. It cannot be translated into German, I'm sorry.
I would like to thank you, all of you, and I would like you to introduce your magazine. And I think it's a group I have no idea about Asylum. I would like to talk to you about its history, those times then, how it was formed, how you came together, and how it exists today. What are the plans, the dreams, the everyday work, your successes, your losses, your plans for tomorrow, something really concrete. And of course, everything was very good, but I'm not from the university, but I would like to listen to something, you know, that exists even now. I think you exist as a group. I don't know. I just saw your the numbers of your magazine, so I don't know anything of you. So I would like you to introduce your world to us.
Thank you. We just wanted to give you a chance or to remind you that this discussion is yours and shouldn't, as usual, just be a matter of questions to so-called experts, which is why we did that stunt of leaving the stage. But perhaps the others would like to come back. Well, and I think I liked the position of let's not talk in terms of being in positions of university or universities or academia or separations of communities in that way. It was a simple enough question you asked about the history of Asylum. It's actually called Asylum, the Magazine for Democratic Psychiatry, which perhaps some of you who know Italy might remember the movement in the 70s and 80s, led by Franco Basaglia, the Movement for Democratic Psychiatry. But to some extent, that was all in the past. The idea of democratic psychiatry today, I would suggest, is almost an impossibility, particularly in terms of some of the arguments and evidence that's been provided in this room and in the room of the Russell Tribunal. So yes, we are talking about dreams. We're not talking about, in one sense, a reality that will be achieved by any simple mechanism of publishing magazines, organizing conferences, and so on. So the concept of democratic psychiatry is a revolutionary one. It's all about creating a world in which the power of psychiatry, the power of the United Nations even, as the arbiter of what's good in the world, is relinquished, which can only be done by the building of mass movements. And I'm not ashamed to have referred back earlier to the communist movements throughout the world, but we have to accept that in the world today, the way in which movements are built are slightly different, and they're certainly not going to be built on national levels, and not even on single issue levels. And the people who support Asylum don't really see it as a mental health magazine, which when we talk about mental health, we usually mean mental illness. So it's certainly not a mental illness magazine, but it's certainly a magazine which is trying, with the support it tries to build and the people it tries to recruit to write for it, which includes Kate Millett, who told me earlier on that she would like to publish her piece in Asylum. It's about creating the possibility of looking at all kinds of different problems in a different way. I mean, what is the connection between mental health or mental illness and the environment? What is the connection between these conferences here this weekend and the anti-globalization demonstration, which is going to take place tomorrow at 2 o'clock? What is the connection with the Gay Pride Week, which is taking place in Berlin this week? We're about making those connections, and it's those connections which will bring together people in a mass movement. So the questions that have been raised in this conference about human rights, about somehow achieving the impossible, which was declared at the beginning of the Russell Tribunal, of making the United Nations as a body somehow enforce human rights, that is only going to be answered by people struggling in mass movements, where people aren't going to be afraid of saying what they believe, or aren't going to be afraid of saying what they feel or experience, and they're not going to be afraid of being locked up and forcibly treated by psychiatry. So it's a dream, and it's a dream, yes. I would invite everybody here to join with us by hopefully buying a copy of Asylum and really keeping in touch with us by sending articles. And if you don't read English that well, we're certainly looking for sister magazines in Germany, as we have them already in Spain.
Terry, can I say in relation to that about the Bastille Day on the 14th of July in Manchester, talking about different alternative groups celebrating. It's a festival day. It's an event related to the Asylum and to the Psychology Politics Resistance Organization and to the Hearing Voices Network. So it's that one of the events where these different voices can be heard and celebrated.
Um, Ich arbeite.
I work here in Berlin in an anti-psychiatry project, a type of asylum. And many of the questions that were asked here from the podium, although worded in an academic mode, nevertheless touched on the problems that we have when dealing with people who have been diagnosed by psychiatrists, reflected the things that we experience. And I would like to link up to what you said about psychotic speech. I think you're not going far enough, really, because the question that you asked at the end of your presentation, namely whether or not one should say goodbye to this category of psychotic speech, simply chuck it overboard. It's not that I have an answer to this, but it is the precondition for our practical work, namely to find other ways of dealing with people, different modes of behavior and treatment. We have very clearly debunked psychotic diagnostics in order to also clarify there is no such thing as psychotic speech, because it always describes a relationship between people. If I don't understand someone or someone doesn't understand me, then that tells me as much about me as it does about someone else. And that's a precondition in order to be able to even relate to people. And so you have very practical problems when you have people talking to each other. And so, therefore, trying to get out of this vicious cycle, psychiatric vicious cycle, the precondition is to, first of all, get rid of all the diagnoses, and critical psychology is helpful in reflecting all this, but critical psychologists, of course, must not then simply accept the objects of their study and take them from others, but rather it is important to simply leave out these categories. They're not helpful, they have no meaning, and they obstruct communication.
Mention one way that we dealt with the problem of psychotic discourse in Britain a few years ago. A group of us were working together and looking critically at psychiatry and at the problem of psychotic discourse. And Jenny, who spoke a moment ago, was part of that group. Together, we wrote a book called Deconstructing Psychopathology. One of the discussions we had in that group was, where is psychotic discourse? One way of answering that question is to see the psychotic discourse as coming from inside people's heads. That is the way that psychiatry treats it. But we have another way of answering that question. When we look at the different discourses, the different ways of speaking that there are around in our culture, there is one kind of discourse that you can call psychotic, and that is the discourse of the psychiatrists. The psychiatrists use psychotic discourse, and they are frightened of people who speak differently from them. They show their fear of difference in their construction of a strange psychiatric language which labels people and tries to make it seem as if there is such a thing as normal speech. There is no such thing as normal speech. We are all different and say many different strange things to each other. The critical psychologists say strange things to you, and the critical psychologists say strange things to each other as well. The thing that the psychiatrists can't understand is strange things. What we need to do is to build a movement, like the movement in England that we call Psychology Politics Resistance, which brings together the many strange organizations of people, the parents who are fighting to keep their children in schools, fighting to stop their children from being put in the special schools, the patients who are fighting against being given electroconvulsive therapy, fighting for their human rights and their right to refuse, the people fighting the labeling by the psychiatric system. And the day that we have on the 14th of July, Bastille Day, a day of revolution in Manchester, is bringing together those many different groups to talk about the work that they do. And in talking about the work that they do and sharing these strange ideas, they have to struggle against the psychotic discourse of the psychiatrists.
I'd just like to add another nuance to the word asylum, which is about immigration laws. Asylum, well, you may have read in the papers, in Britain we have a lot of discussions about asylum seekers, people who are seeking political asylum, sometimes economic asylum, in Britain from other countries. And these people are pathologized and demonized. And so it's one of the very deliberate uses of this very mobile and flexible word, asylum, that we seek to bring together people who are oppressed, marginalized, pathologized, subject to racism, sexism, and all forms of oppression, structural relations that connect together, so that a woman, and I've been doing some research in this area, a woman seeking refuge, an Asian woman seeking refuge in a women's refuge, sometimes even an Asian women's refuge, who has fled a violent marriage that isn't violent because of some awful patriarchal religion, or not only that, but because the state has given all the power and control in her marriage to her husband. It's the structure of immigration laws that do that to that woman in her relationship with her husband. And once she leaves him, if she's only been in the country for 1 year, this is the British immigration law at the moment, if she leaves him, she has no recourse to any welfare entitlement. She is completely dependent, so that even the women's refuges cannot fund her to keep her. She has no money whatsoever. We need to work together to connect these different senses of asylum. Asylum used to be, and it's a utopian ideal of refuge. It's very far from the reality. And we need to mobilize together to challenge all the different systems of oppression that stop people from getting the asylum they need.
I heard that this conference was terminated just before this biological psychologists conference. I don't know when it will be, just next week or one. Is there any idea or any It's now. Is there any idea planned about doing something about it? I mean,
The Seventh World Congress, the Seventh World Congress of Biological Psychiatry,
it's just happening now, yeah.
Is here in Berlin from July the 1st to July the 6th. Some of us saw the psychiatrists arrive from around the world for this congress. It's very important that we're aware of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, where are they?
They're in their expensive hotel rooms preparing their papers.
So there's no plan to do something.
There is a plan. There is a plan. One of the things that is going to happen on Sunday, that's tomorrow, is that there's going to be a discussion at the end of this conference about preparing a mobilization, a press conference, and an opposition to the Seventh World Congress of Biological Psychiatry on Monday. So I'd ask you to be ready to do something about that and to discuss the possibilities of opposing that Congress and making it quite clear that we disagree fundamentally with what those psychiatrists are doing.
And just in case you get a taste for doing that, you could come to London on July the 9th, where there's a lobby planned of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, that lobby already consists of organizations like Mad Pride, the Critical Psychiatry Network, the Critical Mental Health Group, and Psychology Politics Resistance. So I guess this lobby of the Royal College of Psychiatrists is because all the people who've been, all the people coming to the conference at the World Organization of Biological Psychiatry are then going on to London, and we want them to get as good a reception in London as I guess they're going to get from us here.
Okay. We've had a nice time sitting in the audience, and we want to go down from the podium and escape from this room and be normal people again. So we want to thank you for coming along to this discussion, and we want you to show your appreciation by getting active in the anti-psychiatry and anti-psychology movement. Thank you very much.